Blog Talk Radio.
I no longer hear anything.
Okay, we're back. Carla, are you there now?
I don't know. Can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you. Yay.
Oh, yay.
Okay. Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen,
thank you, everyone, for your patience. Yeah, Carla is not at home. She's on a different computer, had technical difficulties, and we're trying to get her back. So we're good now. Whew. Okay, that was a close one.
Okay.
Okay, well, you got to enjoy some nice music by Sally Oldfield, so some good. That was good. Okay, well, do you have any quick announcements, Carla? Or I understand you're visiting relatives this weekend. Okay.
I would like to apologize for all these technical difficulties. The dial-up service here is apparently not capable of hosting Skype, and I was calling in on Skype because it has a superior audio quality. So Skype Blue, and then Skype Blue again, and then Skype Blue a third time, and Monica suggested I call in on my cell phone, which I then did, and then it went blue 57 seconds before the show, and it took me until 8 minutes later to reconnect in a way that stayed. So here I am, and I'm thrilled to be here, and I must say this is just part of a very strange week for me because Jim and I were going to work on the computer in the car. I mean, I was going to sit shotgun. He was going to drive. We were going to discuss some teaching I'm going to do when I get back to Louisville on my book, Living the Law of One, 101, The Choice. And so the computer connection wouldn't work. Nobody had the right connection. So we came out here without being able to work. And not only that, but the iPod connector didn't work. The CD connector didn't work. And it's just been like that. So this is just part of my experience this week, and I do apologize. Other than that, I have no other
announcement. I got to ask you, Carla, was the refrigerator working?
Was the what?
Was the refrigerator working? I mean, you told us so many things weren't working.
Oh, nothing actually has been working very well, including my body.
But,
you know, sometimes things are so weird that you just have to laugh. So it's definitely LOL time.
All right.
Well, here in Lexington, Nebraska. So, Monica, how have you been?
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Just busy as usual, but great. So.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to start with a question that we didn't get to last week. It's from Kristen. And Kristen writes, just wanted to know if the unknown language in the question for the above channeling is tongues. And she is referring to a quote from Kuo, and I'm going to read just a very brief excerpt, and then I'll read the rest of her question. And Kuo says, there are many, many aspects to this study of that which there is to pick from the physical universe, which holds and nests within its atoms, shall we say, the entirety of all the unseen worlds. Therefore, there is an enormous population of those who would wish to communicate with those who are sensitive and can pick up that signal that is coming through. Consequently, all kinds of people in all kinds of ways wish to communicate with those who are within the domain of the earth world. For the most part, only those vibrations are able to penetrate the chemical physical vehicle enough to be heard and to express, which are compatible with your basic vibrations. This gives a certain amount of protection, but in general, the experience of speaking in a language you do not know spontaneously is an artifact of the phenomenon where you have picked up the thought form or an entity. In their effect upon you, these two are interchangeable, which is happy to communicate either in essence, that is to say, with vibrations made with your voice and your wind, your breath, or in an actual language, either of this world or not. The experience itself is impressive to the one who experiences it because it is part of that general collection of intelligence of which we were speaking. It validates the fact that there is more in heaven and earth than was dreamt of in your philosophy. So Christian is asking if Kuo is referring to channeling. There's more to the reading, but that's an excerpt. And if not, what are they referring to? Also, if not, what is Carla's feeling on speaking in tongues? being used as a tool to aid in the clearing of the mind for meditation or as a tool to communicate with spirit. It is a spiritual gift I received through a non-denominational church I attended years ago in my quest for the supernatural in the church and has been a very beneficial tool to me. Have also used as a tool for receiving prophetic words to the church body, also a spiritual gift listed in the Bible. I'm very interested in any information or comments from Carla, her vast knowledge of spirituality and these aspects of church life, etc. I know a lot of people in my circle would appreciate her comments, and that's from Kristen.
Okay. Well, Kristen, you are one of many people who find use in glossolalia, which is the speaking of tongues. I tried to find out the answer to your question. I could not remember, and Gary was gone on holiday. He was the one that took the question, and I could not find the question written down anywhere. So I'm having trouble remembering, and I'll tell you the two possibilities. It could have been from someone asking about speaking in tongues in the Christian sense, and it could have been someone speaking about some language sounding intonations which she occasionally got and wondered if they were extraterrestrial. I remember getting both questions. I don't remember which one that was the answer to, and I could not determine in a specific way. So I can say it could have been about speaking in tongues. It could have been about an alleged ET language that the receiver suspected that he or she was getting, and I don't remember which. It doesn't really matter for the purposes of talking about the utterance of words that are not in a language that we recognize. Now, a language that we don't recognize could be one of 300, 400 languages worldwide, and we don't recognize, most of us don't recognize more than one, two, maybe three. You know the joke about if you speak three languages, you're trilingual. If you speak two languages, you're bilingual. If you speak one language, you're probably American. We are too insulated to appreciate most languages other than English. And it's too bad for us. It narrows us. It's very broadening to know more languages. But you can only know, say, 40 or 50 if you study your whole lifetime. You'll never know the others. So we exist in a deep well of sound. We are sound-producing instruments. Because of the fact that we constitute a sacred linkage between the physical world and the inner world, or the world of infinity and eternity, we are in a unique position to vibrate powerful sounds, or to vibrate sounds in a powerful way. Now, to vibrate sounds in a powerful way, you simply need to get your heart into it, to speak from the heart. It's a wonder what speaking from the heart can do to create sacred sounds. So even if all you're speaking is English and you are speaking with an open heart and you're full of love and compassion, then you are already working with sacred sound. But there's more to it than that. There are sounds, according to the Confederation material, both in Sanskrit and in Hebrew, that have a sacredness to their utterance, per se. They don't need to be translated. In other words, if I said yod, that is a letter in Hebrew. It is also a sacred sound. Yod he va he is the intonation, for instance, of Jehovah or Yahweh. And we received in the raw communication the suggestion to add shin to that utterance in order to bring in the saving love of Jesus the Christ. So yod he shin va he. These are all letters in Hebrew, but they are also sacred per se. So when one goes into glossolalia, if one is in a Christian church which speaks in tongues routinely, one is accessing a portion of the capabilities of the human physical vehicle linked with the open heart. And one is often able to express what feel like very sacred sounds, which do not have a direct translation because nobody knows how to interpret glossolalia, although St. Paul suggested that not only was speaking in tongues a Christian gift, but also the interpretation of tongues was a gift. So I imagine in churches like that, there become people who can interpret those who are speaking in tongues. Whatever the practice is, whether it's ET-related, New Age-related, off the wall, something we've not heard of before, which, you know, we often get questions about at LNL Research, or the speaking in tongues of the Christian church, it can be a powerful, subjective resource for the seeker. It is not always. I myself have not found it useful, for instance, to have extra sensory experiences because of the fact that I cannot share them. I can't bring them back. And that's very frustrating to me. I could see how if you were doing this in the context of a church where everybody was participating, that wouldn't bother you. But I often go into a state of being in the light or being the light. And sometimes it's one, sometimes it's the other, but they're both very nice. They both give me access to the awareness that all is well and all is perfect. And it's a wonderful, reassuring thing for me. But I can't share it. I can't bring it back. And so I love the reassurance. I love the experience. But then I'm asking myself, why is this given to me? How can I make this part of my service to others? And I have no idea how. So I think that the basic limitation of speaking in a language which no one can understand or expressing sacred sounds that do not have a translation immediately available is that you cannot share in a sensible way, in a rational or radiosynodic way with other people. The benefit of speaking in tongues, whatever the origin of those tongues is as a subjective resource for the spiritual speaker. And I'm sorry, I couldn't figure out whether this was speaking in tongues or whether it was that ET person that wrote in. But as I said, it really doesn't matter, Monica.
Okay, well, I have a follow-up question to that, and I'm just wondering if these are sacred sounds that are being uttered. Sacred sounds would presumably be not limited to any particular religion or denomination. Why then does it seem to be only happening spontaneously within the Christian religion and only certain denominations or some of these new born-again or charismatic denominations of the Christian religion?
Well, you have to realize that people do what they know to do. If you don't go to a Christian church that happens to be charismatic, you probably are not going to have the impetus to start channeling in tongues. Because of the fact nobody around you is doing it, you don't have a senior channel, there's no example, there's no reason to think, gee, you know, maybe I could do that. So if you're, you know, at all psychic, maybe you find yourself expressing it in another way. But glossolalia doesn't come up. When you're in an environment, especially if you grow up in it, where there is a charismatic church and you do hear the tongue, and it's normal to you, then you assume that it's one of those things that people might be able to do. And if it appeals to you, you start praying for the ability to do that. And one day, you begin to feel some conditioning, and you let fly. And by golly, it occurs with you. But it wouldn't, you see, it wouldn't just come to one without that prompting from people that are used to it, that find it to be normal and helpful and positive. I remember when I started channeling, much the same thing occurred with me. I had been in the meditations listening to other people channel since 62, and in 74 we ran out of people that we could have the experiment go on with because they had all gotten jobs, moved away, left the group. So Don said, I really need you to learn how to channel so that we can continue this experiment. So I was able, because I had a senior channel to learn from, I had Don to learn from, he put me to it each and every day for about 2 months until I really got going well. And then it was Katie barred the door, no looking back. I got the bit between my teeth and I was off and running and still am. But if I hadn't had that 12 years of listening, if I hadn't had that environment, would I ever have been able to overcome a lifelong training as a woman and a female in this society to watch your mouth, to think about what you're going to say before you say it and so forth? There are all these cautions in place that enable a woman to behave in a civil and ladylike manner. And my mother was very, very enamored of my being at all times civil and a lady. And I think she did a fine job. But that means that you watch what you say. You think about everything that you say, or at least you try to. And if anything is questionable, you keep it behind your teeth and you don't inflict it on the world. You keep a lot to yourself. So all of a sudden, you know, I'm asked to just lay my little compass over the line and let fly with whatever comes into my mind. And it was just counter to everything I'd been taught. So I think that kind of simple caution is going to keep people from just starting to talk in tongues spontaneously, unless they're under the influence of a powerful spiritual experience or possibly a chemical experience.
That's a very, very interesting answer to that question, because I've heard the churches that engage in speaking in tongues, they usually use that as evidence that they are the true religion. See, God is talking to us, not talking to anyone else. So that's interesting to hear your answer to that. That makes sense. Okay. Well, to all our listeners, you can feel free to call in with a live question if you like. The number is 347-884-8770. That's 347-884-8770, and press the 1 key, and we'll put you on the show. We've got a question submitted last week in our chat room at blogtalkradio.com/LLresearch. You can go to the chat room and give us a question that way, too. This is from Mars, and Mars says, I'd like to know if there's a certain meditation or visualization one can do to meet his or her inner realm guides while conscious.
Say that again.
I'd like to know if there's a certain meditation or visualization to meet your inner realm guides while conscious.
Short answer, there is indeed. And I teach it, and perhaps I could just describe it as far as how you do that. First of all, my concept of making contact with my guides, or helping somebody to make contact with his inner guides, is based on the fact that it is perfectly safe to do so, because one's inner guides or one's higher self is part of one's larger personality. It is not from outside the aura. It's from within the self. So the higher self is part of the self, and it's a matter of getting hooked up to it. Now, the the way that you talk to that voice, which is still and small and which cannot be heard normally, is a lot like channeling, but as I said, it varies from channeling in that you don't need a group to do it, you don't need a teacher to do it. But I take my model from Conversations with God, which is not just one book, but I think a series of books now. And the way the author developed Conversations with God was he sat down with a piece of paper and a pencil and wrote a question. And then he found himself writing an answer to himself. So he asked another question and he got another answer. And he began a journal. And the journal became the book, Conversations with God. And I think it's been an inspiration to many. So he was talking to his guidance system. And you can talk to your guidance system. But here's what you have to do. Now, if you will do this without analyzing, you will probably be successful. If you try to analyze what you're getting before you write anything down, then you'll keep stopping the flow of information. So here's what you have to do. First of all, there's a preparation, which is very important. And that preparation I call tuning. Now, tuning is just like tuning up your instrument. I was talking about how you're a wind instrument. We use a voice. We use the voice to create sound, and we can speak sacredly as we speak with an open heart. So what you're trying to do in the preparation before you talk to your guidance is to open your heart. And you can do it in any of a number of ways. Mostly, when you're trying to open your heart, you're just basically checking in with yourself and your issues. What is it that's upset you today? And then whatever it is, you work with that to open, relax, enjoy, have peace of mind. You don't have to solve the problems that are on your mind right now. It's much better if you try. Don't try to solve the problems. The problems will be there. They're patient. What you need to do is move into a place where they're not constricting your energy body, because you really need your energy body front and center and open in order to do this work. Now, once you have tuned yourself, I tune with prayer, with singing. I do a lot of singing, invoking archangels, asking people from the inner planes to join whose beliefs coincide with my own. All kinds of things. And I calm my physical body down by counting down my age. Finally, I'm ready. I'm as tuned up as I'm going to be. My energy body's open, my heart is open, and I set my intention. You know, when I'm channeling, my intention is always to collaborate with the Confederation entities to produce material that is of potential aid and resources to spiritual seekers. And then I ask for the spirit to speak, and I receive a name from the spirit, and I challenge the spirit in the name of Jesus the Christ. Now, it's always a good idea to challenge the inner guidance in the name of the principle or the icon of that principle, which represents the principle to you. The principle for me is unconditional and absolute love. The icon for me is Jesus the Christ. So I challenge spirits by asking them to say that Jesus is Lord. Certainly, when you have figured out how you want to challenge, your higher self is obviously going to be able to meet that challenge. It's part of you. So once you receive that pressure, yes, this is your guidance system, then you say, I challenge you in the name of whatever it is, unconditional love, the love and light of the infinite creator, whatever. And once you get the go-ahead, then you write down your question. Now, it also helps to have pondered what you want to ask beforehand. So you write your question down. You can do this on the computer. It's a lot easier for some people to use the computer than to write. For myself, my handwriting is bad enough that I always use the computer to ask questions on. And then, now this is important. Once you have the question down, written down, or asked on the computer, you then immediately start writing as soon as you receive a thought. It will not be obvious that it's not your thought. It'll just pop into your mind. So write it down. Don't analyze, don't ask, just write it down. Since this is a conscious process, you can stop this at any time if it seems to be going wrong in some way that disturbs you. And when you finish writing that down, then you're free to ask another question, and then the conversation can go on. This may not be entirely satisfactory for you the first time, but once you begin this experiment, I would encourage you to work with this process daily for a period of about 3 weeks before you even think about giving up, because it takes time to open, even though it's part of our, shall I say, extended abilities. They're part of the abilities, I think, that belong in the frontal lobes. And we don't use the frontal lobes most of the time. So we're trying to activate a cosmic mind, an ability that some people call extrasensory perception, but it is an enhanced intuition. And you can trust that you've got it. The question is, how easily will you be able to access it? So I have taught many people this technique. I know it's possible, but I also know that people widely vary in how much effort it's going to take them to open themselves up, to let themselves go and allow themselves to write down information that hasn't been analyzed and thought about first. And that's the key here. When you're accessing your guidance system, your higher self, whatever you want to call this inner guide, you can't kick the tires the way you could if the person were sitting next to you and you could look them in the eye. It's happening in a place within you which is not well understood by our culture and our society. So you don't have a lot of support from your previous background unless you've been in a channeling group or unless you know somebody that receives information and can speak it consciously, even though it seems to be based in subconscious processes. So I wish you all the luck in the world with this experiment and encourage you to go forward with it, because I think if you are able to establish contact with your higher self or your inner guides or whatever, that this is a constant source of support and encouragement to you. So good luck with it, and I hope that that this becomes a great resource for you.
Okay, wonderful. We have a live caller from area code 310. I'm going to get on the air. Hi, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay,
hello?
Who are we speaking to?
Oh, hi, this is Will in Los Angeles.
Hi, Will.
How are you?
Doing great. Doing
good.
Great.
How are you, Carla?
I am doing just well. Thank you very much. I'm in the middle of a wonderful adventure.
I heard. I was listening to the beginning. All the crazy stuff. I've followed you over the years, so I know you're not great with around electronic equipment, as the Confederation has let you know.
Oh, I'm afraid I'm deadly around it. Thank God.
So hey, you know, just wanted to really thank you for all your work. I'd probably log on to LL Research probably once a day, at least during the week. So I'm the one burning up all your bandwidth, but I try to make donations as I have a few dollars left over here or there to help make up for all the bandwidth I used up.
Oh, well, that's why we're here, you know, Will. We're thrilled that you're using us, and thank you so much for the donations. You make us go. This labor of love would never be going forward if it weren't for people like you, and I thank you so much.
Oh, sure. It's my pleasure to contribute. So I do have a question. It's kind of a bit of a follow-up maybe from a question a few weeks back that I was just pondering. I had jury duty the other week, and I called in, and I mean everybody's been on jury duty. Had to sit on the panel, and you know, they brought the three kids in that were accused of armed robbery, and I was just sitting there like, oh gosh, you know, I don't want to sit here and try and pass judgment over these guys, you know. So kind of in light of that, and in light of one of the previous week's discussions that touched, and correct me if I'm wrong, it kind of touched on the idea of the fallacy of victimization. So I was wondering if you could comment at all on our country's justice system and, you know, the jury where you have to sit and kind of, you know, you're kind of forced to pass judgment on somebody. And, you know, I feel that the process tends to be a bit STS, you know, control, revenge oriented, at least on the, you know, the time-space level. But of course, there's people that will say that it keeps dangerous criminals off the street, and in some ways I can see their point. But what's really happening here with all this?
Well, fear is winning over love in terms of the justice system in our country, and I think, you know, to a lesser extent worldwide, we actually have a harder time dealing with people disobeying laws here in the United States than
right.
most any country in the world, according to the statistics. Let's look a minute at the whole concept of laws.
Mm-hmm.
Without some sort of agreement between people as to
right.
the acceptable behavior in a society, things can get pretty hairy pretty fast, and
right.
the rule of thuggery and the rule of the strongest, you know, as Don
sure.
Elkins used to say, the survival of the fattest would take over.
Right.
So it's generally accepted that there need to be enacted laws for the good of the common people, all of us together, so that we know what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, how to behave to grease the social wheels, and how to support our society and keep it orderly and not completely swamped in violence and power plays. So we kind of take the laws of the land for granted. And yet, if we look back at various alternatives to the rule of law that we that began, say, with Solon in the Greek culture, 1,000 years, 500 years before the birth of Christ, we would see the rule being to the strongest, and it could be very eccentric, very cruel, very unfair, very unjust. So it's good on the face of it that we have the rule of law. And unlike the Middle Ages, when torture was almost always a part of a trial, a person was considered guilty until proven innocent. And usually the torture was something like you tried to drown the person. If the person survived, then he was innocent. If he drowned, of course, then he must have been guilty. This
right.
sort of thing did finally go out with the British common law, and I'm glad that we're not there, and I'm glad that we're not having inquisitions where people decide, well, she's a witch, and she's going to have to confess to that for the good of her soul. Of course, it'll kill her for us to torture her enough to get her to confess, but it's for her own good. She will at least not end up in hell. She will end up in heaven because she confessed. We don't have any of that to worry about. But what we have to worry about are two things. First of all, there is no law written that contains love.
Right.
So when you attempt to do the very best that you can for somebody, that then you realize the question is not just, is he guilty of the crime, but also why did it occur to him to do that crime? Is there some mitigating circumstance? And often that is argued in court. Yes, Your Honor, he did this, but he had a horrible upbringing. He was abused. Sure. He was this, he was that. He doesn't know any better. And a lot of people have gotten, you know, eased sentences or even displaced in therapy rather than in jail because the judge saw the justice of these arguments. So there is the possibility of some love. The other problem with laws is that you can't make up a law for every eventuality.
Of course.
So inevitably, somebody is going to come along and be in the gray area and put the jury in a whole lot of problems because of the fact that, they seem to have proved that he did something, but I'm not sure that this is really against the law. So people fall in the cracks. And then, of course, lesser than that, but still very much a part of this, is that if you look a certain way, if you sound a certain way in this culture, in this society, you may get a rough deal because of profiling. If you don't speak well, if you don't know the appropriate things to do in a courtroom, if you haven't been well trained by your upbringing to appear well, to behave well, you're going to move people's prejudices, given that they have prejudices against your race, your creed, your color, your circumstance. There are people that are prejudiced against people that don't look well, people that don't speak well, and so forth. So you have a lot of circumstances where justice is interrupted because of prejudice, because of a bad judge, because of a clever attorney. There are so many ways in which it can be taken down. But to move back to my initial response, the big problem with law in general is fear. Either you do things because of reasons of fear or because of reasons of love. If you were doing something because of reasons of fear, then you're contracting around the problem. You're holding it in place. You're making it big. If you do things because of love, you're generous. You're lavish. You splurge. You're comfortable. You're relaxed. You're expanding around things. The tendency to write law and to put people in jail if they break those laws is based on the fear that if those people remain on the street, they're going to hurt my daughter, my son, my child, my husband, my wife, my friend. And you're worried that the person getting out on the street may well have the capacity to harm you. So the big problem there, you see, is that fear makes you think and behave in a non-generous, paranoid way, so that you're not thinking to yourself, what's this person thinking about at the soul level? How can I connect with this person to render an equitable sentence of justice? You're too busy listening to people who say that if we let him out on the street, who knows what he might do. So you end up with a lot of good people in jail. Some of them are innocent. Some of them are guilty. But the perception on the part of the public is that they're safer because the population in the jails is larger. So it's kind of ironic. If you're just an innocent, good person and you're working a job and you can't even make enough to have a home and you're homeless and you're working and you're trying so hard, you're on the fringes of society, you're desperate, you're caught for survival. But if you decide that you're going to rob a convenience store of some bologna and mayo and some white bread, you know, to have a bologna sandwich for supper, and they put you in jail, all of a sudden you have your meals, you have a place to sleep, you have society. The culture within jails, of course, is not what anybody would consider ideal, but it is a culture, and one can get ahead in that culture. So I think it's very ironic that people are basically rewarded for being criminals rather than hardworking people that are just trying to keep it together. I think that's what's happening with justice in America today, is that it is run by fear, and people are so used to being bullied by the authority figures in our society, they don't even see that they are being taken on a ride of fear when it would behoove us so much more to inject love into the process. And I would love to see people be creative enough to do that. You remember Solomon's judgment? It was so clever, because when Solomon was, two women were brought before King Solomon. This is an Old Testament Bible story. And there was one little baby, and they both claimed that it was their baby. So Solomon just said, well, I'll cut the baby in two, and I'll give each of you half. One woman was happy with that. The other woman said, no, give the baby to the other woman, because I don't want the baby to die. So Solomon then gave the baby to the one who gave it up, knowing that a mother would never be able to kill her own child just to score off of an enemy. That was injecting real compassionate wisdom into an untenable situation where it was a she said versus she said. And I would love to see more of that on the bench. I would love to see more creativity on the part of lawmakers. And I would love to see an era where crimes were more justly valued and appropriately sentenced. I think sometimes there are certain crimes that make everybody unhappy, and people get desperately long, harsh sentences for them, and they actually have not harmed a soul. So they have done something wrong, but the payment that they have to make for the crime seems sometimes to be too great. Other times it seems like people get off almost scot-free because of one technicality or another. So I think we just have to take a deep breath and work with the system that we have, because it's better than no system at all. But I think that there is a lot of room for justice and equality, and I think that organizations like the American Civil Liberties Union and others who try to find justice for those who have been unjustly condemned are to be congratulated, because they're working from love, not fear. Got a follow-up to that?
Yeah, thank you so much. I was wondering if you could just maybe briefly touch on, I commented something as far as the, you had said a few weeks back as far as, you know, the victim versus, you know, perpetrator thing. I think it was a question about domestic violence or something like that somebody who's an attorney had. And you kind of mentioned a little bit about almost like a pre-incarnational contract between those two people, and trying to look at what's really happening in that situation as far as, you know, on a, I guess, more of a time-space than a space-time thing. I was wondering if you could comment at all on that.
I'd be glad to comment on that. We actually have a prisoner newsletter called The Loop. One of our volunteers, a gal named Lorena, is... creates every month, she creates a letter for prisoners. Now, other people can subscribe to it, but they can't write in it. Only prisoners can send material in. And the reason that she did this was because I asked her if she would do the prison correspondence, and she realized at that time that she couldn't put people together, that if you're in prison, you can't write anybody else in prison. It's a law. They don't let you do it. They will not let you receive letters from a prison. So she conceived of this idea of a clearinghouse where people could write in and other people could hear what they had to say, and prisoners helping prisoners. So you can subscribe to it on www.bringforth.org, and it's very useful. So basically, our feeling is that metaphysically speaking, a lot of people end up in prison to do work. It might be work within themselves, it might be work with other prisoners, but it's metaphysical in nature, and it's a part of their incarnational lesson that has nothing to do with judgment, has nothing to do with punishment, has to do with right livelihood. And even if they're not getting paid for it, if they're helping other prisoners, if they're living exemplary lives and seeking very hard to seek the truth, they're using their prison time therapeutically. So I think a lot of times you can say, oh, this is so terrible, he's in prison. But actually, if the person wants to use the prison time well, the prisoner can make a great deal of progress, spiritually speaking, while the sentence is being lived out. So I definitely think that the way it looks metaphysically is far different than the way it looks in the physical world. And there really are no mistakes. So even if unjustly clapped in prison, if you accept that and you cooperate with it and you look around for ways to serve while you're in prison, you may find that you have the development of a wonderful outer gift that is just waiting for you to take hold of it and serve. And I've seen a lot of good people do this in prison. So I'm very grateful for the opportunity to encourage spirituality among the prisoners. And as I said, we have been doing that for years. Monica, I have a feeling that we're running out of time.
We sure are. Will, thanks so much for calling in. It's always nice to have a live caller, and I'm going to put you back on mute. You can continue listening by phone if you like, but thanks so much for your question. Okay, and for anyone else that would like to call in for next time, that phone number once again is 347-884-8770. Carla, thanks so much for your time and for answering these questions. As always, it's such a pleasure working with you. And to all our listeners, you have been listening to LL Research's In the Now with Carla L. Ruckert. I'm your host, Monica Leal. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our two websites, llresearch.org, which is LL Research's archive website, home to over 1,500 channeling transcripts, 11 publications, the Law of One material, interviews, speeches, and more. And bringforth.org, that's bring, the number 4th.org, LL Research's community website featuring forums, blogs, chat rooms, and more. And please be sure to visit our sponsor at waternurtureslife.com if you'd like a way to stay healthy into the new higher vibration planet that we're going into, the changes that are happening, however they end up happening, this water can help you do that in many ways. That's waternurtureslife.com. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions. If you'd like to submit a question for Carla for the next show, please visit the Bring Forth forums at bringforth.org, navigate to the miscellaneous section, and post to the thread Q&A with Carla L. Ruckert, submitting questions, or submit a private question to me at magicalmoons@gmail.com. That's magic with a K, M-A-G-I-C-K. almoons@gmail.com. Have a wonderful week. We will be here next Friday, December 10th at 9 o'clock Eastern.